Ladies and gentlemen, we're shoveling. This is the growing season right here on News Talk. Saga 960 AM. I'm Matt, the producer, a.k.a. Matt McFarland, one of many McFarlands. Pleased to be joined by my parents, Monsieur Jack and Lynn. What's the, Mom, what's the Monsieur and Madame? Madame Lynn. Sorry, geez, man, it's late and my brain is foggy. Mom and Dad join me. Guys, how you doing?
Pretty good, Matthew.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
Awesome. We have listeners now that are demanding more Lynn. We want Lynn. We want Lynn. If Lynn's not on there, it's a crime.
I don't want to share, Matt.
Yes. Well, no. Yeah. She's all yours. She's all yours. I've heard the bathroom at 6 a.m. Let me tell you, you can have her. She's all yours. Let me tell you. It's a disaster.
Do you miss your alarm clock, Matthew?
Yes. For our listeners, I was woken up to the sounds of gastrointestinal distress 6 a.m. every morning. My room was close to the washroom. Let me tell you, it was a cavalcade of excitement. Let me tell you, this week's show is also a cavalcade of excitement. Vines and hedges. We're going to chat about hedges, the whys. Why would you do this? Vines, the whys, or, you know, well, why do they do that? And the history, obviously, here on the growing season, right here on News Talk Saga 960 AM, we get into the history of all this stuff as we are wont to do, because the history generally dictates what is happening now. All that and much, much more. He's Jack. She's Lynn. She of the cavalcade of excitement at 6 a.m. And I'm the victim of the cavalcade, Mr. Matt McFarland. On the other side, let's start off with some hedges. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, like at 9:60 a.m. And we're back. This is the growing season right here on News Talk, like at 9:60 a.m. As you know, I'm Matt, the producer, a.k.a. Matt McFarland, joined by my parents. And today, ladies and gentlemen, let's have some story time. Story time with Uncle Matt. A hedge is a row of bushes or small trees planted close together, especially when forming a fence or boundary, semicolon, hedgerow. This has been horticulture with Uncle Matt. All right?
Yikes. You seem to have acquired a British accent.
Yes,
Matt.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Everything sounds better in British, right? Like, you know, ew, you have gangrene on your toe. Oh, it just sounds lovely, doesn't it? Anyway.
No, yes. That's not lovely.
No, you're right. Hedges, guys. And it's interesting. It's funny how the universe works right here on the growing season, News Talk Saga 960 AM, in that we're talking about hedges. And literally earlier in the week, I installed a hedge on a customer's property. Hedges are basically nature's fence, right, Dad?
Sure. And Matt, have you ever actually physically planted a hedge before this week?
Yep. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep.
So you have.
Yeah.
So yeah, over the years, Matthew, remember, especially when I was growing up as a kid, everybody would do their property lines and boundary lines for their various lots by using hedges. And as a kid, Matt, you used to you never want to plant this one, okay? But as a kid, we had something. Better throw the Latin alert up right away, Matt.
Done. Yeah, let's do it. You know what, Dad? We should almost actually do that. We've been doing that lately. It's been happening just organically. We've been doing that lately at the beginning of every show, and it's been great because I don't have to throw it up ever again. Because man, the flowering shrub show. I think there must have been 45 things to enter into show bits, and we're all to blame for that. All of us, okay? But I have to. I'm on the receiving end of all the pain because it's like it's an essay. But anyway, yes. We'll throw up the blanket.
So anyways, as a kid, Matt, we would plant something called Chinese elm, which is Ulmus parvifolia or something, I believe.
Okay.
But the idea is that this thing here would grow like an absolute weed, Matthew, and it would grow in the neighborhood of, say, 15 to 20 feet high, roughly, say, 10 meters high, and it was a very big hedge. But the problem was, Matt, it would grow very quickly. So, you know, an average person, when they would put in a hedge and so forth, would take in the neighborhood of maybe twice, three times a season that they might have to go through and give it a decent haircut. But Chinese elm, my goodness, Matt, like once every 2 weeks, you got to go out there and give it a haircut because it's going to look so unsightly and get so large and so wide that, you know, and even so high that eventually it's going to become a real pain in the ass. And so, you know, growing up, nobody wanted the job of going out and pruning a hedge, and myself included.
Every 2 weeks?
Every 2 weeks. And the thing was, the price was cheap. It was a very cheap, you know, very inexpensive hedge for you to put in. And it was like one of the cheapest ones that you could have gone and put in. Of course, they always had their other ones in there. We would some later on when I started doing landscaping full time, we would switch over to things like, say, Ribes alpinum, which is the alpine currant, which yep. you probably have come across yep. a lot.
Beautiful.
We would use amur privet, so Ligustrum amarensis, or we would use sometimes Ibolium, which would just be Ligustrum Ibolium.
No, hold on a second. Ibolium is when your eye goes out for a night on the town with the boys, right? Huh? The eye is going bowling, huh? No?
No. All right. But the idea in the end, Matt, is that if you're going to be putting in something, you don't want to put in a hedge that is going to become an absolute nightmare as far as trying to keep it trimmed. And so you know yourself right now, you had just finished, putting in a cedar hedge, right?
Yeah, Thuja occidentalis.
Yeah, so either the field cedar or the white cedar. But you can flip that variety into any of the others. You could use smargs, or you could use... So they don't really like smargs, but go, say, to
Emerald,
Homestrop or Unicorn.
Yeah.
So you could go to any of those.
But you know what, though?
But
the instant you flip over to Emerald, you're starting to get pricier and pricier, right? Because the Emerald cedar is that's a pricey little item.
Sure, but the main problem is, Matt, I don't like them getting burned in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing I don't like. So when I'm doing a hedge, I want to make sure that they don't get burned in the wintertime. And so if you're putting something in and it is an expensive item, you want to make sure that it's going to survive the winter. And that's the biggest thing. And that's where zone hardiness, of course, comes into play again.
So then question for you, Dad, and then we'll get into the history, because I know that Mom's waiting on the bench here and the little door to the ice is open and she's ready to get out there and just skate like crazy, like a little hockey player. But what's the most expensive hedge you've ever put in?
New hedges are very expensive. So any of the taxes, I'm not talking the pyramidalis, but I'm talking, say, Hills or Hicks. We would actually use those. And so if you were doing light pack, tight pack, you know what I mean by that, Matt?
Yeah, light pack, tight pack. Actually, it's funny because, again, is it art imitating life or the inverse? But when I quoted this hedge for this client, I said you want it to be, you know, loose, medium, or tight pack. And all that my dad's talking about is, let's say you have a 20-foot area, and you want to have that hedge basically be a wall of green immediately, you would quote on what they call a tight pack, right? So you would say probably throw between 12 and 16 of these cedars in that 20-foot area, right? And that is basically a green screen immediately. And you go like a medium pack where you would maybe go, I don't know, 14 or 13 of these cedars. And then you go light pack, which is, let's say, 10. And all it does is it affects budget, right? So because, you know, the more of these cedars you have, or the more of whatever you have, the more expensive it is. But it also, if you have less of them, it takes longer for that hedge to fill in. So it's a bit of six of one, half dozen of the other. How are you going to make this work? But
you know what, Matt? In the end, it's more time. It's a time thing.
Yeah.
How long is a person willing to wait before that hedge looks like what they want it to look like?
Now, you know what, Dad? Here's a question for, not even a question, but just like the brilliance of the mind that is
Yoda. Yes.
Right. So, we went to quote this hedge, and this is a longtime customer of ours, and I'm sure he's even listening right now. And we went to quote the hedge, and I did this little option with the hedge, and my dad kind of walks by. He's like, "What you doing?" I said, "I'm just, you know, quoting on a hedge here." "Oh, let me look at that." And he looks at it, he goes, "You know, I got another option here." I'm like, "Oh, okay, what's the other option?" And I'm always intrigued, because when my dad says, "You know," and then stops for about 3 or 4 seconds, you know that there's a big thought about to come. He's about to vomit a thought on the table. And he's like, "Well, what about a screen? What about not even a hedge? What about a screen?" So he said, "Look, what you could do is you could take 3 AB's con color," and many thanks to the Latin alert that's already been put up, because we are just literally we have opened up the book of Latin horticulture and we're just saying everything possible in there. AB's con color is one of the nicest trees out there. Absolutely beautiful. He said, "Well, instead of doing a hedge, why don't you do a screen? You could take 3 AB's con color and space them so that they're going to grow into each other intentionally. And then in the meantime, in the little holes before they grow into each other, we could put something like a downy serviceberry, which is a nice native Canadian flowering shrub. It gets a beautiful fall color." And it's funny because that thought never even occurred to me. And this is where you get into the brilliance of A, experience, and then B, my dad's he's slightly psychotic. Like there's some interesting wiring happening up top, right? I would have never thought about this. Any normal person would have been like, "Okay, hedge." He's like, well, we're going to play with some furs and all this type of stuff. And for me, the thought of playing or the thought of building this potential screen, this green screen, basically, with the silver fir. If you've ever handled a silver fir, they're the most glorious smelling tree ever. And they're the softest. They're just the most wonderful thing. But the client went with the hedge, went with my option. That would be one for me. But I thought it was a fantastic option. So the idea being...
You know what? Wait, Matt. So, you know, Mom in a way connected that, right? But you remember the end of our last show, she mentioned about screens and hedges. So in a way, Mom is responsible for this show.
Yeah, it's true.
Because she brought it up. But before we get too far, you know what, Matt? The history's really cool on this. Can we hit that for a minute? Let Mom cover that for a sec?
Okay, Coach, you're in.
Okay, the history of hedges. Well, it goes back to the Bronze Age. Now, they weren't super specific about it, but the Bronze Age farmers, I guess this is just after agriculture was invented.
Hold up, Mom. What the hell is the Bronze Age? Like
Neolithic. You know what? I don't have the years, but we're going, I would say like 2,000 years BC, but
before Iron Age, right?
Before the Iron Age, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Was there
a... I'll look the years up and tell you in the next show. I would have that ready for the landline.
Is there a copper... Hold on. Whoa. Is there a copper age? Do we have an...
No, iron and bronze.
Iron and bronze. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, anyhow, the Bronze Age, and I don't know which came first, but I will look that up.
Bronze
came first?
Yes.
Okay. Bronze Age farmers, they cleared land. They cleared the woods away for their fields, and I guess they left a little bit of woods between my tribe's fields and your tribe's fields, okay, to define whose fields were whose. But then, so that was like a natural hedge. Now, by the time the Romans came along, they started growing hedgerows themselves, and that would be to define property.
Also to protect the fields and crops and that from various things like wind and temperature, then?
Yeah. And this continued on. Now, in England, in the 18th century, they had something called the Enclosures Act. Now, previous to this, the fields were wide open, okay? They weren't enclosed. So your cattle could wander onto your neighbor's field or whatever. Well, I guess there was a lot of disputes or something because their parliament enacted this Enclosures Act where fields had to be enclosed. So, you know, it was like...
Just think about that, Matt. Before then, nobody really had fences up or anything. They eventually put live hedges, like real hedges up, as divisions between their property lines and that. And that even carried into today. Think about that.
Yeah, but hold on a second. But now listen, okay, this is, and I am not in any way besmirching the British or the English, but as someone that's got Celtic background, there might be a little bit of a besmirching of the British or the English. But this is a group, this is a culture, this is a superpower that thought that war should be fought where you stand at 20 paces from each other and then blast at each other with bayonets. Do you know what I'm saying? There's just a whole
bayonets?
Lot of what the
they
hell?
Blast at each other with bayonets. Well,
guns.
Bayonets
yeah.
attached.
yeah. They didn't use the guns. They just ripped the knives off and threw them at each other. Yes. The guns, right? Muskets, right?
So, Mom, move on to Versailles. That's cool again.
Well, also, though, one of the things that hedges were used for a lot are mazes. And the first recorded maze in history was in Egypt. And Herodotus, a Greek traveler and writer, he visited this maze. But then you go on to Versailles, and they loved their mazes. And they had their huge gardens. They had all kinds of hedging and really ornate patterns. And they tended to use this hornbeam as their hedging
material. Carpenter's
hornbeam.
Yep.
And then later on, they started to use yews, which are taxes, boxwoods, which are boxes.
Whoa!
Good Lord!
Really good. I took that, do you know? I took it in high school.
Hey, and, hold on, Mom. Hey, Yoda, the force is strong with this one, huh?
Spilling over to me.
But wait, Lynn, you're missing some key stuff here. So, Matt, just think about this. You know, Versailles, good old Louis.
Yeah.
Louis the 14th.
Yeah, and his wife, Antoinette, okay?
Yeah.
So anyways, they had hedges, Matt, get this, especially yew hedges, taxes, that were sometimes 35 feet high.
What?
35 feet high.
Okay.
Could you imagine having to go out there? Okay, I would imagine there was a lot of ladder and stuff going on. Could you imagine trying to prune a yew head that's 35 feet high?
Whoa. But were they getting into some manner of like rudimentary genetics? Because yews don't grow that tall.
Well, they have some varieties out there that grow quite tall, Matthew.
But
we just don't use them anymore in our gardens because they do get out of hand.
Now, by the way, you just said that we don't use them anymore.
Use them. it's weak, and, Matthew, weak. But then they use the boxwoods, Matthew. Here's really cool. Okay, the boxwoods today, hey, could you ever imagine? Okay, they had boxwood that they were using in for their various hedging and so forth. They live from 75 to 150 years. Could you ever imagine that boxwood living that long that we would be putting into people's gardens?
Okay, legitimately. So, like, honestly, what the hell was in the water? Or what were they doing that we are not doing? How
today.
Is this possible? Yeah, like...
You're right.
Like
what were they doing?
Yeah. What were they
maybe
doing?
Maybe it's the climate, though. Maybe the climate over in Paris
is
a lot more temperate than here.
Well,
they don't get the harsh winters.
And you know what, too? Here's my little wager on this. I don't necessarily... it does dovetail into we're going to call her Padme. That's her new name. That's mom's name is Padme. That's her Jedi name.
Padme.
Yeah. But it does dovetail into Padme's comment over here in that in France, you're not getting cold temperatures, and with cold comes ice, and with ice here in Canada comes salt. And let me tell you, the number one death to a evergreen would be salt, right? Like,
sure.
So if you're a boxwood, and that's one of the big parts of lazy 2020 landscaping is let's put a lot of stone and then some boxwoods all over the property, right? Lazy. Right? But if you're salting your driveway, if you're salting your walkway, it's just absolutely burning the snot out of your boxwoods and your yews. Ladies and gentlemen,
sure.
You don't want to get salt damage on a yew. Look, I'm going to tell you something.
Oh, boxwoods, Matthew. It just kills the whole center part of the plant. Lynn's got her finger up here.
Yeah.
One sec.
Padme. Also, Padme, their pollution would have been different then.
Right.
Like, we have a lot of chemical pollution because we have cars and airplanes and that. And maybe that affects the growth of our hedge. I mean, back at the time of Versailles, you know, the pollution would have been excrement, like horse.
I got it. That's it. That's it.
Like that.
You've got it.
You know?
Excrement.
What?
That's what it was, Matt.
What?
They were practicing animal husbandry again. Okay, you keep going on about that. But they were using... basically all this animal with an IT on the end, it was all over the place, and they were using that to keep the hedges growing and getting them to grow into these big monstrous things. I think that's probably what it was.
Listen, man, I'm sorry, but I don't buy it. We got genetically advanced fertilizer here these days. Come on, right? Like, it's got to be the presence of salt. You know what?
Something.
You know what?
I don't know. But you know, you're right about the fertilizer. What we'd be using something, 16.44 or 18.64?
Well, yeah, and I mean, slow release, that's fine. You can shovel as much poop on a boxwood as you want, right? But the slow release is it's time to break down. It's been genetically modified or it's been scientifically engineered to give this tree the maximum boost over a longer period of time. You know what, Mom? Here's an interesting question. Now, this is a little bit of a connect the dots thing, but much of your family lives out west. And when I say out west, I'm talking British Columbia, Alberta. Because they use less salt out there than we use here, right, Mom?
Well, I would say like down in, I don't know much about Alberta. Where my brother lives is Edmonton, and that's a really cool city. So I imagine they use lots of salt. In the lower mainland of BC, not where my family lives, they wouldn't because they don't get winter. Okay,
right.
But in north central BC, where the bulk of my family live, yeah, they would use salt.
Okay, because I would have to, I would love to know the death of these types of evergreens in areas that use less salt. Now, you don't have to be, you don't have to have much more than a room temperature IQ to figure out the fact that if they're using less road salt or less salt on your driveways or less salt on your walkways or whatever, you're going to have less burn. But here's my point. I would imagine that the number one death to a hedgerow nowadays has to be salt. Has to be.
You know what, Matt? I also think that people, okay, this is, you talk about segues. Here it goes. I think that the fact is that the way we pruned plants in the first place, like to make them into hedges. So when we would be pruning something for the wintertime and throughout the season, we're going to prune it wider at the base and narrower at the top. Why?
Well, because if you prune it wider at the base and narrower at the top, wait for it, ladies and gentlemen, the sunlight hits all facets of that hedge, and all facets of that hedge are able to produce or able to engage in photosynthesis, creating brand new green growth. However, if you prune that in a straight up and down, basically like a rectangle on top of a stick, there are certain portions of that hedge that will die out because they're not getting the sunlight enough to engage in photosynthesis.
Very good. But why do we prune it flat on the top? Is it just because we're lazy and we want to keep a straight line? Why did we print it flat on top? I know a lot of people saying, oh, it's because it looks pretty that way and it looks like a wall or whatever. But why do we do it as far as gardeners, Matt?
Because if you prune that main leader flat up at the top, it causes the bottom to fatten out.
No.
What? Yeah?
No. No. Maybe why? Yes, maybe no. I haven't said that in a while, eh, Matt?
I know.
You print it flat on the top because you want to, okay, this is mainly for winter again, going back to your segue going on, but it allows to accommodate snow in the winter. So you want either having no snow or more snow. So the idea is that the snow sitting on the flat area on top that you're using for your hedge will either protect it from, say, windburn and so forth. It'll also add a bit of moisture to the plant. And then if you have it on a rounded edge, it has a tendency to build up more in those areas. So that's why you're not really supposed to prune it round on top. Unless you go, of course, you're getting into topiary, which again is a whole different bird, right?
Huh. I never knew that.
That's not a dumb man, you know?
No. You're like, listen, you have been dubbed Yoda for a reason. But for me, I always thought that it had to do with if you trim the leader off, it makes the bottom go fat.
No, you know, when you prune anything, okay, you know yourself personally. So if you prune a shrub, basically all of your growth goes to the exterior portion of the plant, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if you're pruning something that, regardless if it's rounded or if it's square or rectangle, whatever, looks like a wall, flat on top and also straight up and down on both sides. The same idea. All the growth is to the exterior portion. So it's going to grow that way because you're forcing it to grow that way. But there are things that you have to do and the reason it is good for the winter. Simple as that. It helps to accommodate snow. Simple as that in the winter. People would never guess that. But here's a biggie, Matthew. Before you would start doing anything on hedge, and especially if you're going to be doing it for, say, pruning it, what's the first thing you should do?
Dig a trench.
Get the trench. I've already got the hedge in the ground. What's the first thing? I said when it comes to pruning it.
Oh, all right.
What okay. do you need?
Oh, string lines?
No string line. What's the number one thing you told me you're going to do? You're going to have to do a job tomorrow or something, right? What's the first thing you do into your tools?
Oh, right. Sharp tools.
Why?
Well, because if you have dull tools, when you go to prune this hedge, you're basically not having a nice, fine, razor-sharp cut. You're basically ripping the branches off, and you're going
to
cause...
Yeah, what happens to the tips?
Tips are going to get all burnt off.
And they go brown.
Yep.
Okay, so sharp tools
yep.
means a nicer job, healthier plant, and yep. that's good in the long run.
Yep.
So the number one thing, Matthew, is you must have very sharp tools to start with and make sure that when you're throughout the season, from time to time, sharpen those tools.
Yep, absolutely. And we've made mention of this. I mentioned it on the Landline Wednesday night, 7 p.m. on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitter. Just search for the Landline or just follow us. Just Google the growing season and it'll pop up. I made mention a great tool for Mother's Day would be an angle grinder. And yes, it's not romantic. It's not a spa visit. It's not this or that. But for the avid horticulturalist in your house that happens to be mom, it would be so nice to have all of her tools really, really sharp. You wouldn't believe the number of questions that I get on a job site from clientele that are like, what are you doing to the tools? I'm like, I'm sharpening them. Like, you can sharpen a shovel? And it's like, yeah, you can sharpen a shovel. But we sharpen our felcos. Again, felco.com for all of your pruning needs. Speaking of hedges, we sharpen our felcos. We sharpen our shovels. We'll sharpen basically anything that can take a sharpen. Even before every pruning job, we'll put a nice fine edge on it on all the tools. And let me tell you, it makes everything nice and crisp. It also does probably 25 to 30% of the work for you if your tools are sharp.
You know what, Matt? Mom's got her finger up again.
Yep. Quickly.
Okay, this is about a hedge.
Yep.
Water generously for optimum growth and disease resistance. Yeah, they definitely like to have their drinks of water.
Yep, absolutely. And one of the things that we make sure that we do is when we install the hedge, we actually put small stakes around the hedge at various increments so that the hedge does not tip over via wind. We'll put stakes on the corners and then some in the middle, and then we'll even wire around that stake, or we even put binder twine, because a big stiff wind can come along and just knock your hedge over. Specifically, if your hedge, if your whatever it is, cedar or yew or whatever, is 5 feet and above, this hedge can fall over. Right?
Sure, and you need it to, until the roots are established, Matthew,
yep.
You must make sure that this thing is not getting whipped around in the wind. Right?
Yep, agreed. Okay, on the other side, probably a little bit more hedge talk, but more chatting about vines. One of the things that that my father and I, here's one of our, not weaknesses, but one of the things that we've tended to overlook. We'll talk about that more on the other side. She's Lynn, he's Jack, I'm Matt. This is a growing season right here on News Talks at 960 AM. Many thanks to the Sounds of Horticulture for that musical interlude. This is the growing season right here on News Talk Slug at 9:60 a.m. I'm Matt McFarland. Pleased to be joined by my parents, Jack and Lynn. I am the fruits of their labor. I am the vine that they have created. I love it. I love it. So, Dad, I made mention...
You're hedging your bets, right?
Yes. That's pretty good. Yeah. I love it. Wow. That song was awesome. It was a little hedgy. We're idiots. I love it. Okay. The number of comments that we get about our stupid horticultural jokes are just like, it's just countless. Dad, we made mention on the other side, or I made mention right before we tied up the loose ends of the previous segment there, that we don't feel like we've taken advantage, or in the past we took advantage of the vertical element of a flower bed. And one of the things that when we stepped back out into landscape design and construction, and I made mention of this on a previous show, that we made a conscious effort to sit down together and kind of do up a hit list of the things that we were not going to use anymore. We made a real effort to completely reformat the plant material that we were using and many of the aspects of how we were creating gardens, and not necessarily in a way that it wasn't like we weren't doing good work prior. It's that the writers of Breaking Bad used to routinely write themselves into a corner every season, and then in the season following would look to see how are they going to get themselves out of this corner that they had written themselves into. And I think it was a wonderful exercise for my father and I to basically go through and begin to scrap a lot of the things that we used to use and force ourselves to play with new technology or new toys. And my dad said, I don't know, probably a little while back, he said, you know, I don't think that we used vines near enough in our previous incarnations, and especially when we're getting involved in tiny gardens. And ladies and gentlemen, by the way, growingseasoncanada.com, visit TGS Tiny Gardens. You're not really taking the hint. A lot of these consults and stuff, and a lot of these jobs that we're pricing, these gardens ain't tiny. You're not really taking the hint.
No, they're not. Okay. Not at all.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. But he said, listen, if we're getting involved in this tiny garden thing, because it's supposed to be a small space, we have to use every pocket and corner of the space to make it worthwhile. And the one thing that we did not use nearly enough of in the past would be vines. And there are some reasons why. The number one reason that we would hear from clientele when it came to vines is, I'm worried about damage to my house. And that's justifiably so, Dad, right? Because you get into some of these ivies and they can really damage your home.
You know what, Matt? You're right on that. But I think what you're missing out in on a whole is the actual vines. What do you think they do, Lenny?
They help you exploit the fullest potential of your garden, because you're using the vertical. You have, you know, the plants kind of horizontal, your flowering shrubs to the back, and then you put your vines in, and, yeah, it's
you know what?
now you've got a green wall of plants.
No, I'm not. You know, I'm starting to sound like me.
I know.
But no, Matt, you're right. The idea is that sometimes people would have something that was on the ugly side they wanted to cover. And so we would recommend things that they could put up on say, a wall or on a fence that would actually take away the ugly, okay? And things, I know you don't like them very much, but it could have been something like Virginia creeper, which is part. You hate it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Parthenocissus quinquefolia, or even the Boston ivy. You must see that a lot on people's homes.
Yeah.
And that's Tricuspidata vetchi. So, yeah, so the idea is that these things grow very fast and cover just about anything. But the main problem, Matthew, as you would know, you had just mentioned earlier, they can become invasive, and they can also damage your brick because they have something called holdfasts. You know what holdfasts are?
Yeah, it's basically just like, it's like suction cups. These things basically suction themselves. They have these little... It looks almost like a little appendage. It's like a tiny little arm that comes off the side of the branch, and literally they have suction cups, and these things manage to get themselves into the rough friction type areas of the brick. And they love brick because brick is not a smooth surface, right? This is a rougher surface, and they literally get into the slight little holes in that concrete or in that brick.
Sure, man. And they're basically... think of them as adhesive discs or something like that, or we call them holdfast. But you say they fasten themselves very solidly to surfaces. And then you would, like I said, Boston ivy, Virginia creeper, so forth. But you know what, man? I'll even see them growing up dead trees and up trunks and walls that are falling down. Like the Virginia creeper, man, you stick it anywhere near anything, and even this pile of rubble, the Virginia creeper will grow over it. But what I like about them the best is their fall color, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
they really have a beautiful red-orange fall color.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was chatting with somebody on the Ontario Gardeners Forum. If you're not part of the Ontario Gardeners Forum, get on Facebook. And if you live in Ontario, which the majority of our audience does, get on the Ontario Gardeners Forum. Mike and Bev are wonderful there. They are allowing us to host the landline on their channel or on their group. And I was talking to somebody, and she said, listen, I have this really ugly gabion basket in my backyard. My backyard is lower than my neighbor's. And I have this gabion basket. For our audience that doesn't know what that is, basically you've seen this stuff before. It's like big steel cages. And inside the steel cages, they put rock, aggregate, large chunks of aggregate. Okay. And it's used as a retaining feature. Actually, it's a remarkable little piece of technology because it allows for full drainage because the aggregate inside these cages is very, very big. And the water just percolates through it. The number one thing that will push a wall over is hydrostatic pressure, which comes
right, especially at the top, right?
You got it, right? And so that's water and soil pushing against the wall. Well, this, because the stuff allows drainage, it doesn't really become affected by that. But she had these gabion baskets. I guess their whole row of backyards was lower than their neighbors. She said, "Well, I had this stinking basket. What do I do?" And I said, "Well," and it was in full shade that I said, "Climbing hydrangea." I said, literally, plant climbing hydrangea. It will absolutely adore it. It will love it. You could have literally a wall of white and green.
Sure. And the idea, Matt, it does have a white flower in, say, June, July. And it blooms for quite a while. But, you know, I think what I really kind of think is cool, in the wintertime, the bark peels off.
Yep.
What do they call that?
That's exfoliating.
Or is it abscission? Is it?
No, abscission no. layer is the abscission layer is the thing. The abscission layer attaches the leaf to the branch.
Right. Okay, you're right. Yeah, so the bark kind of peels away and it has a cool look to it. So, Mom, if you were going to pick something that was in a vine that you really think is really attractive and you think it's one of your favorites, what would it be?
Well, you know my favorite vine, Jack.
Well, the one we grow here?
Morning Glory.
Oh, go ahead, Lynn. Hit it.
Love it.
Yeah, Morning Glory. I love Morning Glories. They're very easy to grow. They're very easy to plant. They bloom in the early morning or at the end of each day. They don't like full sun. And they have these big, I wouldn't call them trumpet. They're bigger than that, blooms. And they come in usually pink, purple, white. Heavenly blue is one that's a favorite. They're great. And the leaves, now they say the leaves are bean-shaped. I think they mean the leaves are shaped like the beans, like the leaves of a bean plant, because they're great big, broad leaves. And it grows really quickly. Now it's an annual, so you have to put it in every year, but it's great at reseeding. Like we seeded morning glories here three or four years ago, and they just keep coming back. We've never put more seeds in. They just keep coming back. But they make a privacy screen really quick.
Now, and that's one of the big downfalls, ladies and gentlemen, is that the word invasive would be a word that might be used to describe morning glories. My mom just made mention of it, right? Like, once you've planted these things, if the morning glories have enjoyed the area that you have planted them in, they have no problem getting it on and dropping seeds everywhere. You will have them again next year.
You'll have them for years after.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, question for you. What would you say your favorite choice would be for a vine? And if so, explain.
I got to go with clematis.
Clematis?
Yeah.
Really? Why?
I love clematis. Clematis are they're a user-friendly vine in that once you get them growing, they don't take much to get growing. They don't have any sort of a stay fast, or a hold fast, so they're not damaging your brick. Now, they do need to be suspended with either a trellis, or we use these things called vine guides or stay guides, and it's like a clear plastic disc that you epoxy to your brick, and it has a little twist tie on it. You can basically not even see it. So the problem with a trellis is sometimes it looks kind of cumbersome, and trellises can look really, really broken down and old pretty, pretty quick. So the stay fast are nice, as well as the clematis. They're aggressive on the climb, but they're not really aggressive on the climb. Like you can manage this. It's not like your Baltic ivy or your Engelmann's or any of the stuff that just goes absolutely nuts. Clematis are a slower growing vine, but the floral color, like these things flower all the stinking time.
And if you pick the varieties, Matthew, you can get the flower time extended.
Yep.
And so you were talking about clematis. Well, what's your favorite one?
I know
you got one for your house there. What was it, Nelly Moser?
Yeah, now Nelly Moser is great. Nelly Moser is like a mauve color. It's a classic. It's a classic colored clematis. But I recently specced one on a client's property, and it was called Pink Fantasy. And it's really, really cool. It has pointed petals on the end, and it's pink, but it has this streak of, like, so let's say it's a lighter pink, almost like an eggshell pink, but then it has this streak of bubblegum pink down the middle of each petal. Absolutely nuts. It looks almost fake. And
do you know what, Matt?
What?
One problem with clematis. What is it?
They tend to get woody?
No.
What?
They like their roots protected.
Yes.
So you must plant something around the base of them, whether it's a perennial or something, or even a shrub. But the idea is you must protect the roots because they like the roots cool. If you ever look at it, I guess you've never really pulled one out to have a look, but they have a very small root system for the size of the plant, and they're not very deep. So that's the one thing you got to be careful with. And you were mentioning, as you say, you had Nelly Moser for your place. Well, I prefer Jack Manny. It's my favorite.
Yeah, which is the pink, right?
Purple.
Yes.
Purple.
Yeah.
Large purple. And it's actually one of the hardiest. Now, if I was to pick one, Matthew, one of my favorite choices, my favorite choice, would be Campus radicans, which would be the trumpet vine.
Love it.
But I think my all-time favorite would be American bittersweet or Solastris scandens.
Yeah, bittersweet's so, so awesome. Now, the only problem with bittersweet, powdery mildew, right? Which...
No, that's not bittersweet. That's Lonicera. What do you think here? Nope, hydrangea.
Honeysuckle.
Timing honeysuckle. Boy, your mom's correcting dad
Jeez,
here.
Jeez, man.
So, yes. No, you're right. It's the honeysuckle gets the mildew on it.
Right, yeah.
But the American bittersweet, Matt, what is really cool is they have a fantastic fall color. They got this color in gold, yellow, with a bit of orange too going on. And they have these scarlet red seeds happening. And the fruits last right into the winter, but there's only one problem with them. You have to plant two, because you need a male or a female for fruit production. Otherwise, you get just a green leaf thing going on.
Hey, by the way, speaking of the male and the female, we recently did a landscape job, and normally when you plant a holly, my brain's on vines here. When you plant a holly, you need a boy and a girl. Well, they've now developed the equivalent of the earthworm when it comes to hollies. They have a blue prince slash princess. It's basically like
Both sexes.
Both sexes on the same holly. So it's a self-pollinator.
Oh, it's great.
That's awesome.
I didn't know it existed. Did you?
No, I never knew. I never knew that before. I was amazed by that. I was like, oh, really? Cool. Okay. Well, and it makes complete sense. Why not have just like, you know, batteries are included. You don't have to get the toy plus the batteries. We have both.
Sure. And the thing is, Matthew, when you're selecting your plant, you always want to make sure that you're going to pick something that's going to survive. And so pick the varieties and so forth that are much hardier. So your vines go, it's the same way for your vines as well. But, you know, there's also highly invasive, and we mentioned a couple of that was Virginia creeper, Boston ivy, and so forth. But, Matt, there's one out there called silver lace vine.
Oh, God.
And it's Fallopia, geez, I have to really think this one through, Bolshuvanica, I believe is how it's pronounced.
I believe.
But anyways, it has, you know, the bloom's nothing special, but it's highly invasive. And so there's lots of them out there that are invasive. So you have to be careful with that one as well, you know, Matt?
I agree. Yeah, and this is the thing, too, is we would routinely stay away from anything that would become invasive. If you ever see us specking vines, it's always the stuff that you either need a trellis or you need some vine hold or stay fast or anything like that that would hold the vine up. If you start removing the trellis, it might be easier on you in the short term, but in the long term, this stuff, like the number one enemy of brick and specifically kiln-fired brick these days is moisture, right? So if you've got this vine that is now attached itself to your brick and it's constantly giving off moisture, and these things are always oxidating, so it's constantly giving off moisture and humidity, this thing can literally take the face right off your brick eventually.
Well, it depends. Again, if it was an ivy, I would agree with you 100% on that. But normally what they tell you to do is to leave it an air gap between the brick and whatever, you know, your trellis and so forth. So keep them out slightly.
Yep.
So that there's air circulation. It gives you a healthier plant. It also it allows for, say, humidity, and even in the wintertime. Because remember, your house is always giving off heat. Even in the wintertime, you just don't notice it. So the plants are also being affected by that. So if you got something growing on your home that is in direct contact with the house, it's kind of going to be kind of awake at times when you would get sunnier days in the winter. So you've got to be careful. So keep it out a bit so there's a bit of air circulation happening, because it almost gives you like an insulation between that and the vine, Matthew.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it, while we're on the topic of trellises, really, really easy little project. You know, you can build your own trellis super, super easy, just with little 1x2, whether it's cedar or even pressure treated. And I know that word pressure treated is not necessarily the most politically correct these days, but nothing looks nicer than to have a trellis that is not the bought off the shelf trellis. It's very, very simple. Some 1x2s with some little brad nails attached. Like my parents have had cedar trellises and cedar lattice on their house. Dad, when did you and Grandpa build that stuff?
Back in the early 90s, and they're made out of, actually, I think they're actually made out of redwood.
It's, you guys cut it. It was basically 1x2, right?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. The same thing going around my patios this summer. I'm going to make a wide lattice so that I can accommodate things like rose climbers and so forth and various vines. So I'm going to hit the vertical, Matt.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit the vertical.
Yeah, no.
But Munch got something here. She's got her finger up. Keep I'm ignoring her here. Just one sec.
Well, besides the vertical, you know that you can plant vines in hanging baskets and window boxes.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Now, you know what? I don't think I would plant morning glories in that, because
no,
they would just go all over the place. But, you know, some of the ivies that like to tendril down and that, they could, yeah, they look really nice in those.
You know what, Matt? That would not be a bad idea to try to tackle that on a few people's places, using, instead of actually, you know, physically plant them in a pot or something and see what we can get, you know, in places where people, say, have balconies and so forth, where they're running into issues about what to do on, say, the vertical lines. I think it's an excellent idea.
Good stuff, Liddy.
Well, now, and one of the things that we've talked about in the past is you don't necessarily have to, like, this vine can act as a ground cover, correct?
Sure.
Like, you don't necessarily, like, if you want to have your area covered up by a clematis vine, just don't allow it to grow up.
When we were in California, Matthew, we noticed they had a lot of heterohelix and heterobaltica, which is basically your Baltic ivies and your English ivies, okay? And they were using them strictly as ground covers. So they were using them for, like, even growing over, say, steep banks, you know, over low walls, of course, but down, you know, down in areas that you would never expect, like even areas that were, say, basically granular, a lot of rubble, because it just cover it over. As long as the top portion where the roots are established is, say, in a decent area to grow, the medium is good. Once that area is established, those vines will go anywhere. I don't know if you know any of the criteria that's involved when it comes to planting vines and so forth. But most of our listeners should take into consideration whether or not, let's say, it's an annual or whether it's a perennial. An annual, for most part, would be something like your sweet peas, or it could be there's beans out there that are flowering beans, and there's also, of course, Opuntia purpurea, which is the morning glories. But again, all the other perennials that you could possibly think of. And then take into consideration, do you want something that is deciduous, which means that it will lose its leaves every year? Or do you want something that would even be evergreen even in the wintertime? So that would mean things like your euonymus and so forth, Matthew, right?
Agreed.
And then, of course, the fastening mat has gone into that. But you want to know about, does it have a colorful foliage? Is it an interesting foliage? Does it have interesting textures? Does it have a fragrance? That's a biggie. And longevity, how long is this thing going to live? Because the number one thing that you must take into consideration, it takes at least 2 to 3 years for an atypical vine to become established. Okay, some of them take 5 to 6 years, okay? So you want to make sure that whatever you're going to select is going to be around for the long term. And then another thing, does it have a colorful fruit? I'm not talking grapes, but I'm talking something else. Like I had mentioned, my favorite is Was it bittersweet?
Yes.
I think it was. Yeah, so the bittersweet. So the idea is that you want to have something that's interesting and somebody will come along and say, what the heck is that? Okay? So you take notice, everybody else takes notice, and it makes your house look like $1 million. And again, is this something that you're going to have to replace a lot of? So make sure, again, I keep beating the horn.
it would be tooting the horn and beating the drum.
Thank you. But anyways, how expensive is it going to be to replace this? Or are you going to just, you know, take this as an opportunity and replace it, okay, and try something different? Okay, so these are things that people need to take into consideration. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Matt.
What I would be recommending is, before you go out and start strapping something to your house, just Google or research just the invasiveness of this. When you start to get into vines, especially if you're a novice gardener, what you want to do is you want to get something that is slightly user-friendly. Okay, so like your clematis, even your morning glory is fairly user-friendly. Now, with the morning glory, they tend to grow pretty aggressively, but they're not going to damage your home. They also don't take specific pruning. Like, we haven't mentioned the word wisteria yet, for God's sakes. And I mean, that's the most, like, that and the Rose of Sharon, just leave them at the nursery. But those things take a specific type of pruning. They like a certain type of soil. And even then, they're like, nope, not going to flower for you. You can just take your request and shove it up your bum, right? Because they just don't want to do it. But whereas you put a clematis up, you put a bittersweet up, you put a honeysuckle up, those suckers are going to flower every year. They will flower. Now, again, my dad was saying with the clematis that they like their roots cool. I've even heard of people putting a rock near the roots, or I planted some black-eyed Susie around my clematis so that it keeps the roots sheltered and it keeps them cool. But for the most part, there's many vines out there that are user-friendly. And if you're a first-time gardener, you don't want to start to get into any of these ivies that are just going to take over and be a complete nightmare later on.
Sure. And Matt, you know, the climbing honeysuckle, I have to say, it's probably one of my favorite, the Mr. X hybridums, for instance. And I used to use a lot of ones that were called mandarin, which are orange, and then the gold flames, and the drop more scarlet. Drop more scarlets are good as well. They're quite red. But the problem was, and you've noticed too, Matthew, is it gets spider, or not spider mite, they get...
mildew. Powdery mildew.
Mildew. Yeah. Powdery mildew. And nothing's more disgusting as when you have a plant or a vine that is just covered in flowers, and then all the leaves look kind of silvery gray, and then they fall off. And that's not worth the energy in the end, right?
No, but man, if you have the right location for these things... Powdery mildew, you have to have a lot of air circulation, not a lot of standing water, and some sunlight. If you have the right location for these things, they're just gorgeous. Just the most wonderful. The honeysuckles are beautiful, but they are very, very prone. We've talked about in the past about our viburnums and how the viburnums would just get beat to death by the powdery mildew.
But I was thinking, Matt, you were talking about the honeysuckle, and I think that the hummingbirds, they're a favorite of the hummingbirds, the same as the Campus radicans. So I think that's a good thing as well. So in the end, you know, you choose something that you like, look it up, make sure that it's going to have a flower. Is it an evergreen? And is it going to be at your home for the long term?
What a wonderful place to stop. And as usual, we covered about 7 to 10% of the material. More material, the material that we didn't cover, will be featured on Wednesday night's Landline. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. But the least you need to know, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on TGS Live. And I would say on Thursday morning, I generally post the brand new Landline show. You can watch the show in its entirety. We usually go about 90 minutes, and many are saying that it is the soundtrack to their gardening. As well as if you'd like to have the growing season out onto your property, pretty simple, growingseasoncanada.com. Click on TGS Tiny Gardens, lets you know what our thought process is when it comes to designing your property. Even if you don't have a tiny garden, we can take those same principles and just make them bigger. Okay, as well as if you want to just contact us when it comes to inquiries or consults or landscape design, growingseasoncanada.com, click on contact, and it comes to me, and you get to actually interact with me over email. Not that that's a real big plus, because I'm a doofus, but whatever. I'm Matt the Producer, aka Matt McFarlane. Please be joined by my parents, Jack and Lynn. Mom, how was this show for you?
It was very interesting. I learned something new every week.
Me too, honestly.
You know what, Matt? I think that, you know, when we do our Landline on Wednesday night, I think we should get into the proper way of actually physically planting a hedge and so forth, and then maybe some of the problems areas when you're putting in a hedge, especially bylaws. There's a biggie, eh, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely, there's a biggie. Listen, guys, honestly, number one thing when it comes to planting a hedge is water. In fact, you want to increase the likelihood of viability or the livelihood of your plant material, the number one thing, even forget fertilizer, it's all about water. Water, 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 water. Honestly.
And be aware of your neighbor.
Yes. And be aware of your neighbor. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I heard that there's a joke floating around somewhere.
Yes, there is. I've got the joke.
Do it.
Would you like to hear it?
I'd love to hear it.
Garden shears will never be outdated. After all, it's cutting hedge technology.
Jack out.
If you miss any part of our show today or any of our earlier broadcasts, don't panic. Just log on to our website at www.saga960am.ca/podcasts and look for and stream our podcasts of this show and any of our other great programs.